We have to tell you that we composed the handout on your chairs quite a few weeks ago, and we called it, of course, the Sermon on the Mount. Harry tells me he's forgotten most of the church history he learned about 60 years ago. So some time back he called into the Catholic Education Library in Doubleview and picked up seven different books, all titled The Sermon on the Mount, by different authors with all sorts of angles and theological interpretations of looking at Matthew chapters 5, 6 and 7 in what has been traditionally called the Sermon on the Mount. And here last Sunday we were delighted to hear Peter Oliver telling us he doesn't like that word sermon because we don't either. And we decided we'd not give any sermon today about the sermon, even though we two both love the Sermon on the Mount. So we've decided to call it something like the Mountaintop Statement from the Heart, composed by Jesus. And yes, because today is the opening day of NAIDOC Week, we've been seeing a connection with the Mount Uluru Statement from the Heart, composed by many elders and leaders among our first Australians. And just as theirs was and is an invitation to all Australians to walk together in a better way from now on, Jesus' big statement was and still is an invitation for us to plan and work for a new world. In fact, that's what the Catholic Franciscan author Father Richard Rohr calls his book on the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus' Plan for a New World. It's a book.
And that's the book. Thank you, Heather. You can sit down now if you wish.
Thank you.
I've put up with. Sorry, can't speak ad lib anymore. So there's a pretty good connection between the two, with Jesus' plan and discourse showing so many ways that he invites us to be better at being honest, socially just, and more truth-telling. As Heather said, Jesus' plan goes for three chapters in Matthew's Gospel story. And we decided we can't reflect about everything, but we do want to spend our time, the rest of the time now, in reflecting on selected parts, to read them out, spend a bit of time in silence, thinking and maybe being brave in our own plan of how we might choose to follow Jesus' plan. But if you'd like to have a quick look at the back of the handout, there are something, another little connection. We've heard a few speakers. We had Beth, somebody rather recently, who mentioned and talked about this book, The Message. And we've also had our dear friend Bevan here, and we've heard him once or twice speaking how he really has got a good liking for Eugene Peterson's, not exactly a Bible, but it's a rendition of it. He calls it The Message. He tells us that he started his ministry in a seminary teaching the biblical languages of Greek and Hebrew as a scholar and a professor. And he sort of expected there to be stuck in the seminary for the rest of his life. But life took an unexpected turn when he was appointed to parish work. And after a while, he noticed that not many people really cared or understood about the Bible. So he made a ministry of biblicising his people in the pulpit, in small groups, in home groups, retreats. He writes, I wanted to help people to really listen to the message. There seemed to be the world of the Bible and the world of today. So I tried very hard and constantly to bring the language of the Bible into the language of today. And I did this in one parish over 30 years with the people. And one day an editor came and in 1990 asked him to write it the way I talked it. So for the next 10 years, I did just that. I produced this book, The Message, and that was the result. Thanks, Heather.
So we want to try now to do what Eugene Peterson did. We're much more familiar with the traditional or NIV verses and might find Eugene Peterson's explained, even paraphrasing verses a bit strange, and even we may feel a bit less at ease, but try. For a while we'll read only selected sections of the Hilltop Statement by Jesus to his disciples, first in the NIV Bible translation we're used to, then in the words of the Message, taking it all in, reflecting and hopefully applying it somewhat and somehow to each of us in our own lives, not so much the lives of others. We'll do that for a few sections, and after 10 or 15 minutes have some table talk sharing, and after that we'll continue doing it some more.
So now we're going to use two microphones, and I'm going to read the New International Version, the NIV version, from here. And Heather's going to follow up straight away with Eugene's. And the whole idea is that we are reflecting. We're not giving a sermon. We're just reflecting on the words of Jesus in a couple of different ways. So firstly, chapter 5, starting with verse 3. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
You're blessed when you are at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule.
So perhaps after we've both said that, those little bits, perhaps we'll just spend a few seconds thinking about it, comparing it to ourselves. Verse 4, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you.
Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled.
You're blessed when you're content with just the way you are, no more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves, proud owners of everything that can't be bought. Can I read that bit again? That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought.
Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled.
You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat.
Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy.
You're blessed when you care. At the moment of being careful, you find yourselves cared for.
And verse 9 from the Beatitudes. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons and daughters of God.
You're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and heart, put right. then you can see God in the outside world. You're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and heart, put right. Then you can see God in the outside world.
So they were just a selection of the 10 Beatitudes, which Eugene Peterson calls the Happitudes. Then soon after, Jesus gives his disciples some pretty serious warnings and positive advice about justice issues. So, chapter 5 still, verse 21. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, "Do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment." But I'm telling you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, "Raca," is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, "You fool," will be in danger of the fire of hell.
You're familiar with the command to the ancients, "Do not murder." I'm telling you that anyone who is much as angry with a brother or sister is guilty of murder. Carelessly call a brother idiot, and you might just find yourself hauled into court. Thoughtlessly yell "stupid" at a sister or brother, and you are on the brink of hellfire. The simple moral fact is that words kill.
And so, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. Go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift.
This is how I want you to conduct yourself in these matters. If you enter your place of worship and about to make an offering and you suddenly remember a grudge a friend has against you, abandon your offering. Leave immediately. Go to this friend and make things right. Then, and only then, come back and work things out with God.
Then Jesus talks about a few moral issues, and this is what he says, verses 27, 28, and 29. You have heard it said, "Do not commit adultery," but I am telling you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into the fire.
You know the next commandment pretty well too. Don't go to bed with another spouse. But don't think you've preserved your virtue simply by staying out of bed. Your heart can be corrupted by lust even quicker than your body. Those leering looks you think nobody notices, they also corrupt.
Then he talks about revenge and about forgiveness. Verses 38 and up to 42. But this one's a bit longer. You have heard that it was said, "Eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." But I tell you this, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other side. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you.
Here's another old saying that deserves a second look. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Is that going to get us anywhere? Here's what I propose. Don't hit back at all. If someone strikes you, stand there and take it. If someone drags you into court and sues for the shirt off your back, gift wrap it, your best coat, and make a present of it. And if someone takes unfair advantage of you, use the occasion to practice the servant life. No more tit for tat stuff. Live generously.
And the last bit in this section before we have a bit of table talk. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbour and hate your enemy. But I am telling you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons and daughters of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? And not even the tax collectors do that.
You're familiar with the old written law, love your friend, and its unwritten companion, hate your enemy. I'm challenging that. I'm telling you to love your enemies. Let them bring out the best in you, not the worst. When someone gives you a hard time, respond with the energies of prayer, for then you are working out of your true selves, your God-created selves. This is what God does. He gives his best, the sun to warm you and the rain to nourish it, to everyone, regardless of the good and bad, the nice and nasty. If all you do is love the lovable, do you expect a bonus? Anybody can do that. If you simply say hello to those who greet you, do you expect a medal? Any run-of-the-mill sinner does that. In a word, what I'm saying is, grow up, your kingdom subjects. Now live like it. Live out your God-created identity. Live generously and graciously towards others, the way God lives towards you.
So just a few more minutes now, or maybe 5 or more minutes, just for a little bit of table talk, just to not so much bring up controversial things, but just tell your share on your table anything that comes to mind that is going to help us all. Excuse me, folks. Time is moving on, and we're just going to finish up with Jesus talking about prayer and about being, as Eugene Peterson says, being fair dinkum about things. So this is chapter 6, verses 1 to 3. Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men just to be seen by them. If you do, you'll have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you go to give, when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogue and on the streets, just to be honoured by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward. But when you give to the needy, do not even let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. Then your Father will reward you.
When you do something for someone else, don't call attention to yourself. You've seen them in action, I'm sure. Play actors, I call them. Treating prayer meetings and street corners alike as a stage. Acting compassionate as long as someone is watching. Playing to the crowds. They get applause, true, but that's all they get. When you help someone out, don't think about how it looks. Just do it, quietly and unobtrusively. That is the way your God, who conceived you in love, working behind the scenes, helps you out.
And finally, he talks about praying, verses 5 and 6 of chapter 6. So when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray, standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. So when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father in heaven. Then your Father in heaven, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you.
And when you come before God, don't turn that into a theatrical production either. All these people making a regular show out of their prayers, hoping for stardom. Do you think God sits in the box seat? Here's what I want you to do. Find a quiet, secluded place so you won't be tempted to role play before God. Just be there as simply and honestly as you can manage. The focus will shift from you to God, and you will begin to sense His grace.
And we can finish up with a prayer, or the prayer read twice. First of all, by the NIV version. We can all join in together if we want to. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Well, let's finally hear the Message's version of the Our Father.
Our Father in heaven, reveal who you are. Set the world right. Do what's best, as above, so below. Keep us alive with 3 square meals. Keep us forgiven with you and forgiving others. Keep us safe from ourselves and the devil. You're in charge. You can do anything you want. You're a blazing beauty. Yes, yes, yes. I don't know about you, but I like the old version of the Our Father, not the Message one.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you all for listening. And if anyone's burning to say something, we've got about 2 minutes left.
Thank you. Thank you, Harry.
Thank you, Heather.
We'll close it there, shall we? Thank you. Thanks, folks.